Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Eurogamer Newscast, and this week we're discussing the biggest Xbox leak in history. We're looking ahead to the Switch 2's potential launch lineup. We're asking why there are so many industry layoffs, or at least that's what I would be saying. If you're listening to the Eurogamer Newscast, hello, I'm Tom, Eurogamer's editor and host of our weekly discussion podcast, where we break down the biggest gaming news stories and share insight from our news reporting team. Head to your favorite podcast app now to listen. Just search Eurogamer Newscast.
Last time on Curse of Strahd, after barely escaping the destruction of Kazan's tower by an aspect of Strahd, the party and their new ally, Esmeralda, flee on her wagon towards the town of Krezik. However, as they begin to hurtle over the muddy roads of Barovia, an inhuman shriek and the galloping of flaming hooves echoes behind them, and two undead riders and their nightmare mounts give pursuit. Another desperate battle follows as they fight back in a high-speed chase through the woods. The wagon crashes, but the party manages to destroy their foe, though not without seriously injuring several of them and forcing Dog's Body to use his werewolf form. Now, Esmeralda leads them to the nearest safe haven, a winery where she claims they will find allies. You also, this is less of a recap and more of a note to all of you, there you managed to salvage a considerable amount of supplies from Esmeralda's wagon, which we have been going through and the group will sort out as they go. And that is where we are going to begin today, with you guys on the muddy trek of road. You are currently, the wagon crashed shortly before a large stone bridge that crosses over a wide, fast-moving river, with a path leading to the north, which leads towards Krezik, and a path leading south, which Esmeralda is kind of encouraging everyone to follow her, which apparently leads to this winery. And I believe that that is where we wrapped off, I think.
Yeah, sounds about right. We had to pick up all the stuff. I mean, we can go through the stuff we picked up if you want.
Sure.
I took a lot.
Okay. I took two of the alchemist fires out of five, one of the manacles. I might need those at some point. One of the stakes, that's my stuff. I don't know if we had any upgrades in armor or weaponry on any of the characters.
I just suddenly realized that there is a shield up for grabs, and I would like to take that because Dog's Body is proficient in shields.
Although you've got a great axe, which is two-handed.
Yeah, he's got a great axe. So there's no.
It's not a battle axe.
That's why I didn't add it, did I? So he doesn't take in the shield. He hasn't taken the shield. I have taken a healer's kit, a set of manacles, a vial of holy water, an alchemist's fire, an antitoxin, two stakes, and that's it.
Nice.
Nice, nice,
sure.
Nice.
Sure.
Yes, okay. It was allowing the rest of the party to get first dibs on things, because he's eyeing up his sun sword and is very content with it.
Okay.
True, true.
Yes, Ismark took the silvered flail and a dagger, I believe, as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He's now Ismark Belmont.
Not quite, nice. But yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Good reference.
I think Zeke's taken the leather armor and a couple of spell scrolls, major image and remove curse.
Nice. Ooh,
what's your AC now, Zeke?
My AC is exactly the same.
But it looks cooler.
That was the, cool that was,
I believe, The leather armor is specifically fitted for a woman, and it is in a very similar style to that of Esmeralda's, the stuff that she's already wearing. So it's this kind of dark, it's almost like a dark red leather with gold kind of studs and trimmings. Cool. And it protects things like there's a thick band around the neck. The arms are fully protected. So it's clearly designed for fighting monsters, especially vampires, it seems.
Nice.
Okay.
Rose, did you want to take anything out of the pile of stuff? Because you won't be able to take everything with you. Otherwise, anything that kind of remains will have to be left here at the wagon. So anything you don't want to take will be left.
I just took holy water, a stake, and a silver dagger.
Because you'd already taken the quiver, didn't you, of arrows? Rose, so.
And I've already got the quiver.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know if, what else are we leaving then?
There's lots of things like hunting traps and.
Dog's body dropped some manacles by you and was like, "Take that, because you know what to do." It's a guy's bed.
But and I think we should take the alchemist fires and the antitoxins because they're small enough that we can divvy them out.
Yep.
Okay.
So
I'll take one of the alchemist fires then.
Sure.
Yeah, I've taken one, so that's four accounted for, so there's one alchemist fire left and one antitoxin left.
I'll take the remaining alchemist fire then.
Yep.
And I'm eyeing up this mirror. How big's this mirror that's in there?
Well, there's two. There's a mirrored shield, so it is it's not a full shield, not like a massive tower shield or anything like that. It's larger than a buckler, but it's like a rounded mirrored shield. So polished, very polished steel to give a reflective surface.
Okay. But that, I noticed in the list there's also just a steel mirror. Is that the same thing?
Yes, there is also just a steel mirror. That's probably no bigger than a sort of A5 piece of paper.
I'm going to take that.
Okay, sure. Well, anything you want to take? Otherwise,
more unwieldy.
It is erased from our memories as it is left behind in the road. Nice. Esmeralda will call back. When you've gathered whatever you need, we should really get moving. We still have a few hours before daybreak, I think.
Okay. Let's get going.
Okay. And with that, she begins to lead you south. The road takes some time. A few hours passed, but sticking to the road, you are not suspiciously, but nothing untoward occurs. Eventually, the winding road that just ekes through at points, becoming a serpent between thick canopied dark woods, gnarled branches like hands and arms reaching out, trying to snag anything that drifts too close to the edges of the road. You begin to see the road opens and the forests give way to farmland, an orchard that stands before you. And I will read out here. After half a mile, the road becomes a muddy trail that meanders through the woods, descending gradually until the trees part, revealing a mist-shrouded meadow. The trail splits. One branch heads west into the valley, and the other leads south, with a wooden sign that reads Vineyard. As you emerge, unpainted fences blindly follow the trail. The fog begins to take on an almost ghostly form as it swirls between the neatly tended rows of grapevines. Here and there, you can see rope-handled half-barrels used for hauling grapes. A large group of trees line the road on either side of you, and you can see that there are signs of battle. You see upturned earth. You can see what appear to be several humanoid creatures made of twisted plant-like matter, vines and thorns mangled together to give the vague shape of a person lie scattered around, crossbow bolts, parts of their arms and limbs almost ripped apart, it seems. And these bodies lay scattered everywhere.
And there is clearly something moving in amongst the grapevines. There is also a large house you can see in the distance. Encircled by the fog, you can see several of the windows are lit by candlelight. Something glints inside and then vanishes for a brief moment.
Well, friends, regardless of what has happened here, I do believe we're not going to be too quiet approaching. They may already know we're here.
I hope all of this is a sign that they're at least capable in a fight and not a sign of something that might be coming their way.
One would hope.
They are capable in a fight, I can assure you that, although I'm a bit concerned that I mean, Esmeralda kind of looks a bit confused. They are not fighters as such. Capable, but they're not... They wouldn't start fights. I'm a bit concerned what might be happening here. We should be careful.
Okay. Did you notice something moving over there in the vineyard?
She looks over just like... Could be the mist playing tricks, but... Should keep our guard up. And she just gestures. I'm not accustomed to how your team really works. I'm used to doing things on my own. You arrange yourselves. I'm going to try and get a closer look at the house. And she begins to drift off into the mists and to the grapevines.
All right.
Okay. Fair enough.
Irina and Ismark linger closer to you lot. Ismark has got his new flail out. He's testing it in his hands, looking about suspiciously. But the grapevines, the vineyard here is quite large. You'll need to pass through the rows of grapevines before you reach this winery, this house. You can tell it's a large building. It's clearly a distillery as well as accommodations. 2 floors high, a smaller building to the side that looks like it houses... a small barn or a wagon or some such.
With, I guess, kind of military knowledge or experience with warfare, am I able to kind of look at the battle and just see if it was like a one-sided battle or if, you know, someone started to flee or if people made it away or any sort of indication of how the battle went or whether it's ambush?
I think you can... You can definitely make a check for me. Again, just because you're a soldier doesn't mean you understand this stuff. It might just be that, you know, you are good at fighting. So I think this would either be... I'll give you a choice. You can either make an investigation check or a... I'm trying to think what would be the most apt here. Maybe a survival check. Either one, whichever is higher.
Okay, they're both the same. I'll do an investigation. 15.
Okay, yeah. So Xeros, you kind of crouch down, you look at the bodies turning one of these creatures, and they're clearly made from plant matter. Needles, vines, thorns, all wrapped up into the vague effigy of a humanoid shape, but no organs, no eyes, just a deformed body. You pull out several crossbow bolts, large, clearly fired by a heavy crossbow, with a decent aim, somebody who knew what they were doing and knew how to fire. There's two of them, which indicates that they didn't fire once and expect the creature to go down. They knew to hit it twice. Scanning around, you can see that most of these creatures were charging the front of the building. But you can see off to the side that there are clearly signs of a scuffle on the side of the house as well. Looking in that direction, you can see that there is a broken window, glass trails outwards leading off into the woods. Signs of more desperation. You think that perhaps creatures attacked the front as a diversion, and then a smaller force entered the side and were driven off, but in a rather panicked state.
Okay. Yeah, I'll kind of communicate that as I'm spotting it with everyone. something drove them away. They found something in the house. The survivors may still be in there, but they may have chased to finish the creatures off.
As you guys, as Xeros is doing this, a very light rain begins to just fall from the clouded night sky.
Rob's body has Hunter's Bane, which means I have advantage on wisdom survival checks to track fey, fiends, or undead. So is that something I could use now to sort of track around and have a sniff and see if I can sense?
I mean, yeah, you can make a survival check. I will say you don't get your advantage. Looking at these creatures, they are not undead, they're not fiends, they're not fey, they're not something you're particularly familiar with, I would say.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll make a survival check anyway.
Yep.
That'll be a nine. Sure.
Nine. Yeah, these creatures don't register. Smelling them, it smells just like wet earth. And as this rain is beginning to fall on the grapes and on the trees around you, you're losing their scent in amongst all the other things. These are plants. They've been brought to life somehow, but they're not. They don't smell of undeath. They don't smell of magic in the same way that fiends and fey do. These are clearly other beings. You do get a sense, though, dog's body smelling. You can smell that humans were here. You can smell they left some time ago, but you think that they were here maybe commanding these creatures. They smell of dirt and feces and old matted fur and char of fire, perhaps. You kind of get a strong scent from that. You can also smell ravens, like raven feathers and birds. Strong presence of ravens here.
I will relay
this
information.
We knew that they were like were ravens.
Yeah.
Then Esmeralda told us that.
I believe Esmeralda told you that, yes.
Yeah.
And what were the were ravens? Who were they a sign of? I can't remember. She mentioned like what the were ravens were, like whose they were. I'm sure she said something like that.
Maybe.
Oh well, so, I'm a stupid dog. Who knows?
You guys are currently just stood on the outskirts of this winery. You can see the trail continues further south. The road that you've been following to get here continues on, but I mean, this winery is clearly the one that Esmeralda mentioned, but she's vanished. She just vanishes into the mist, crouching low and disappears.
I think Ezekiel would probably start moving out of the way of like the battlefield and probably find somewhere in cover just to hunker down until she comes back.
Sure, yeah. You hunker down by one of these up like half barrels. So it's kind of a big half barrel rounded with ropes, and you can see the grapes have been piled in there. But as you begin examining it, Zeke, you kind of touch with Lilira and the earth. There's something you notice, but can you roll a nature check for me just to see how much detail you get out of this?
15.
There's two things. One, you know the earth here is different to the rest of the soil you've seen in Barovia. You can reach down and everywhere else you've kind of trodden, the grass has been almost a grey. It's been lifeless. It exists for a purpose, but there's no life about it. It, like the mists, it just oozes grey, drab melancholy. Here, even in the darkness where there's not much light, you can see that the grass and the vines are beautifully green. They are green as they would be in Faerun when you were there. They have life. It has, the soil smells fresh, not like a grave, like the rest of Barovia. This smells fresh and earthy. There's magic at work in this ground. And the grapes, you can see the ground, or at least there was magic. Now you look around and that sign of life is beginning to fade. The grapes that are still on the vine are shriveled and dead, no longer capable of being used. In the barrels, there are a scant few remaining clusters that look good to eat. Something has drained the land here of its life. A little remnant remains, but not much.
I think Zeke would then like just pick up like a handful, maybe of like the soil or like some of the vines, and just like go back to the group. Just say, like, look at this, look at this, look at the earth, look at the soil. It's green. It's good. But I don't think it's going to last for very long.
or
whoever was keeping it good is leaving,
or has been killed or driven out.
Yeah,
we need to investigate further. We needed some respite here. If there is no one here on our side, we need to know.
I've been trying to keep an eye on the house. There's light inside. I can see shadows, but I couldn't tell you how many or who they are. But there's someone living in that house. I promise you that.
Let's move forward.
All right.
The rain is coming down.
And Ismark will stick close to you. Yeah. If you guys want to just start making your way to the winery, are you trying to approach stealthily, or are you trying to make yourselves known and obvious?
I've got my swords out, but I'm not exactly being stealthy about it. But I'm prepared for an attack.
Okay.
Some kind.
Same for everyone, or is anybody going to try and hide?
I'm the same as Jesper.
Just striding forth.
Do you have He Who Grins Out? Tried. Oh, I never don't have it out.
Hard to put away.
Yeah, sure. It's huge.
All right. As you guys begin making your way through the grapevines towards the house, you begin to notice more and more of these plant creatures. And in the middle, you also begin to see other creatures. Scarecrows. But these scarecrows have razor-sharp claws instead of hands. You can see that they once stood free on legs, not on poles. And they look like they have been torched and burnt and toppled over as if in a battle. And
that's
as you
that's a nope on clogged scarecrows.
They have like cloth faces, like sacks, but their mouths have been stitched into these hideous grins. That stretch out. Jesper and Xeros, two crossbow bolts thud into the ground by your feet, coming from the direction of the house, and a voice, a cranky old Barovian voice.
I don't know who you are, but do not come any closer, or the next bolts will be into your chests. We've had enough of the witches, fiends. We'll not be tricked again.
I put my hands up and kind of like flop the sword so it's not being held pointed up. Just
so you're kind of just holding it relaxed.
Yeah, relaxed. We mean no harm. We only seek refuge. No tricks.
You hear like some muttering coming from inside the house, and emerging on the porch, the door kind of opens and you see this old wizened Barovian man, his cheeks kind of sunk, a big long wispy grey beard, his head bald, but kind of semi-covered by a floppy sort of fur hat. He kind of steps out holding a big heavy crossbow, and he's holding it with considerable strength still, pointed squarely at your chests. Beside him emerges a younger man who you imagine must be his son by the same facial similarities they bear, and they kind of crook their eyebrows in your direction.
We've been tricked by the witch's magic before, but I can't say that we've seen anything like this one, and they gesture towards Xeros. Who are you?
We are not of this land, but I believe that if you wanted to kill us, you could. I was admiring the shots you took to kill these creatures of the vine. We're not with this witch you speak of.
Flattering words, Dragon Man. But I am not one to trust so easily.
And he kind of looks around, whispers to the boy. And then from behind them, you hear another young man and a woman kind of step forward.
Father, please, we need their help. It's obvious that they're not with Baba Lasaga.
The older man snaps back.
You stay out of this, Erwin. I've had enough of you already. I'm not going to hear it. Well, I'm not going to stand here and let you turn around potential allies when our children have been taken captive. Come, friends, the old man isn't going to shoot at you. I won't let him. Come, please, you're welcome here.
You see the older man turns around and is glaring, and he almost goes to punch him, but the younger man, who seems more in his prime, just kind of shoves him back, and the old man kind of turns bitter and quiet, and he kind of gestures, like, please, come, and whoever your friend is sneaking around in the mists, they can come in as well. I've been told to expect someone like you, whoever you are, madam with the wooden leg, and you see Esmeralda kind of emerge from the mists, like, thought I was being quieter than that. but they gesture you all inside. I would hurry before any more of these things show up. We've got a little moment's respite, at least.
All right.
I'll head in.
Cool.
Yeah, same.
You guys make your way in to a quite lavish winery. You step inside, and the thick smell of oak barrels, citrusy fresh wine, a roaring fire. You can smell wood smoke and like sizzling meat, and all sorts of things kind of wafting through. Again, very much like the Mad Wizard's mansion, there is almost a moment of life and respite here. That you weren't quite expecting. The gentleman that you pass, you notice, you couldn't really see a distance, but all of the individuals you see gathered, and they are clearly a large family. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 adults and 3 children, 3 young boys kind of tucked behind them. The boys are all wielding small, like, swords. They've got, like, sharpened short swords, and they're holding them defensively. All of the adults, including the 2 women, both are armed with some sort of weapon, whether it is a large kind of spear, a crossbow, a large meat cleaver, all sorts of different things that they've kind of cobbled together. You notice that there is a striking family resemblance. All of them have dark black hair streaked with the occasional bit of white that just kind of streaks through their hair, almost like a single burst of white in amongst a shocking black mane. Even the older individuals all have this dark, glossy black hair that is a familial trait. And they all have very bird-like features, kind of sharp noses, very kind of observant wide eyes that look around as they welcome you inside into their house. The younger man who was speaking before introduced himself.
My name is Erwin Martikov. This is my father, Davian Martikov. He owns and runs the Wizard of Wines winery.
Pleasure. I'm Jesper.
Who are all of you? Jesper? Vistani, I know. I recognize. And these Ziki. Strange fellows? Ziki.
Hello.
Hello, this is my brother.
Not dogs, buddy. Zeros, I'm her brother.
I gathered.
The dragon.
I gathered.
Yeah. I'm dog's body. Hi. I'm me. I have no sibling relation in this party.
All of them, dog's body, as you enter, there's almost a sense of they tense up, but then that quickly relaxes. But there is a look at you. You know that they know what you are. Just looking at you, and you know what they are. You can smell the lycanthropy in them, and they can smell it on you. You know, they can tell that you are a lycanthrope, and you can tell that they are lycanthropes. There is this kind of unspoken knowledge that you have.
Don't go sniffing their butts.
I think I have a feeling as to the nature of their lycanthropy. I'm not saying this out loud, or at least I think I'm not. It might be inside voice or outside voice. Who knows at this point with dog's body? I kind of give a sort of like a nervous little, you know, like a low down wave when you're kind of like, hey, and it's like a really awkward, like, hey, I'll just do a really low, hey.
They, one of the younger women steps forward and is just like, come in, take a seat. And you can see, I think all of you would notice when you step inside, there's this front of hospitality it becomes immediately apparent that these adults and the children are exhausted. Their eyes are sagged. You can see that they've gone pallid. The house is a mess. You can see that tables have been turned up and planted against certain windows. All of the like knives have been brought out and laid out on a table ready to be grabbed in case of a fight. There are bottles that have been laid out on the table as well, each filled with a thick, greasy-looking liquid that you suspect might be oil or some sort of fat that's been all laid out, or grease that's been laid out. They have clearly prepared this winery for not just a battle, but a siege. They have readied themselves for a prolonged engagement, and they look like they've been fighting a long time. Several of them you can spot have minor injuries that seem to be healing quite rapidly. But yeah, you can see that they are in a desperate situation.
What about the the broken window? Is that being like repaired or barricaded? Or
That must have happened recently. You can see that they have shoved kind of a bundle of chairs and coat racks. They've tried to blockade it with as much as they can, but you look around, Xeros, and can quickly notice all of the heavy furniture has already been used to block other entrances. And in front of that broken window, there is a shattered armoire. It's been splintered and smashed to pieces, and that's just scattered around that broken window.
Yeah.
Okay.
As you enter, Erwin kind of nudges the old man, who grumbles,
"Well, I suppose if you are guests of a winery, I must at least offer you a glass of wine. I'm afraid that we only have one type of wine left, our least popular. The purple grape mash number 3. It is the cheapest of our varieties. But it is yours if you wish a glass.
Delicious.
We would appreciate grape the generosity. Great pitch, by the way. It's our worst one.
You should know, Vistani. Barovians don't care. Wine is wine. The only ones who have a particular case are the ones who still have any emotions left to feel in this godforsaken, miserable land. Ugh, and he just kind of gutters and grumbles as he makes his way over to a barrel and begins pouring out.
I look to the younger person. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Baba Lazaga.
Yes, I suppose if you are to rest here, and it seems that you approached us with, I don't know why, but yes, you'll need to leave quickly. This winery is under siege. There is a witch who occupies a ruined town not far from here. She's been assaulting her and some druids that worship Strahd. He spits on the ground. They have been assaulting our winery for the last few days. Strahd has always ignored us. We provide the people of Barovia wine for free. We don't charge. That keeps his people drunk and placated. We've never opposed him. We've never gotten involved with his work. And so he left us be, despite the fact that we have not always thought very kindly of our generous lord. But a few days ago, things changed. Strahd has become unstable, erratic. It's been going on for months, but a few days ago, 2-3 days ago, he appeared as a visage in the sky, smoke and insects bound together like his form. He told us that this land was no longer ours, that he revoked our rights to it, that we had to go to Castle Ravenloft to work for him. We've worked this land for too long, and we're not afraid of Strahd. So we didn't leave. That's when the witch and her scarecrows and the druids and their plant creatures, they began to attack. At first, we could hold them off. We have a good field of view, and, well, all of us know how to fight. But they kept coming. and they kept coming. Every time we would try and rest or take watch, while some of us slept, they would attack en masse. I don't think any of us have slept in days now. And then a few, perhaps half a day, I'm not sure of time anymore, but a few hours ago, they came, and we thought it was just another attack, but they came with a purpose. They broke in through that window over there. They grabbed three of our children and fled. They've taken them to Babalasaga.
There's more of them?
Yeah, big family.
Damn. Sorry to hear that. I only mention their name because we have been given some guidance. I don't know if you know Vistani custom, but I read Taroka. And... No?
We know a little, yes. We've heard the stories of Madame Ava and her readings. But we always, and you can see they kind of look a bit confused, and one of the women, you think maybe this young man's wife, steps forward. We always thought that it was only the women of the Vistani who had the gift to read the Taroka.
Likewise, but times are strange, and as you
they
know,
certainly are.
We too, I need to make this clear, I think that is clear, we are against Strahd, and we are doing everything we can to face him.
Anyone with sanity is against Strahd. Only those who have given in to despair or lost their minds would ally themselves with such a creature.
The difference with us is we are taking a stand, and we have made some progress. And we have this, and I'm going to show them the Sun Sword and reveal it.
Lights up and it casts this beautiful silvery light through the room. The three young boys kind of let out a gasp and kind of like, you know, clutch their own swords a little tighter. And you can see that all of the adults take it in. They breathe, they drink up the light that you are shining. And even the older man kind of lets out a like,
by the Morning Lord, that is a sword of sunlight. That is a weapon that can destroy him. Finally, we can be free of the devil.
We are entwined, all of us you see before you, in fate and destiny. The cards have been drawn. Yes, including you, Dog's Body. We have...
Was I doing that?
You were. We have already recovered one relic, and we need more. Babalazaga, I think, has another. We can, with these relics, we can truly face Strahd, maybe even defeat him.
She's a powerful witch. I'm not surprised that she has many treasures and trinkets, but she is powerful, very powerful. She has not come to attack the winery yet, but I don't think even us could stand against her. Perhaps you, with your fancy sword of light, have a chance, but if they attack us again here, we are finished. Without others, at least.
Perhaps our coming has, again, been a matter of destiny, and that we come at the right time, so that we can at least ease the burden, maybe provide a distraction, because we are going to them.
You would go up against the witch, and you see the one of the young women steps forward, and especially to Jasper, she kind of doesn't grasp your hands because you have the sword out, but she looks pleadingly,
please, if you are going to the witch, rescue our children. She has taken them hostage, I am sure. They have taken my Claudio and Danica's Vigo and Yolanda, my youngest, the girl. She has them, I'm sure of it. You must rescue them.
Of course, we'll do everything we can.
And if we will do everything we can. If you need a place to rest, if you need food, beds, whatever we can provide, by all means, take it here. We have a bit of fight left in us, and we've been awake this long. We can go a few more hours.
Thank you. we too have been up against quite a lot in the past few days, so some respite would be appreciated before we head into the swamps.
Yes, of course. Berez, you'll need to head to Berez. That's where this witch lives. It's a befouled place. It's full of death, but that's where you'll find her. I can take you there. I know the way to Berez. I'll lead you. The area around here is dangerous. The swamps are... There's mires and quicksand. It's best if I take you. But get your rest now while you can. You'll need it if you're going up against Babalasaga.
Thank you. Do you have word from Krezik?
Krezik? We have. A few of this abbot's fanatics came to us asking for us to head back into the town to take what wine we had and bring it into Krezik, but they don't understand. We can't just give up this land so easily. You bear this sword and you are an enemy against Strahd, perhaps, and the old man kind of snatches the younger guy's arm like, Arwen, I know that they say that they are against Strahd, but we can't trust them with that. That is, we have kept that a secret for generations. Father, enough. You accused me of wrongdoing once. I'm going to set this right. This man bears a sword that can be used against Strahd. He is a Vistani that stands against his own Dark Lord, and these people are clearly not of Barovia. They have come for a purpose, Father. We have to trust them. There's something that we have here. Babalasaga took the other from us. The grapes, the land here. Barovia does not grow. At best, some farmers in the villages can manage a little wheat, a little grain, a few vegetables here and there, but our land is rich. Perfect soil for growing wine.
Yeah,
it's because we have something.
Beautiful.
We have a gemstone. It is buried in the earth right now. It's about the size of a pine cone. Green crystal glows with a light. When it was planted here centuries before us, it made the land vibrant again, like it's not part of Barovia. It's the only way that we can grow the wine here. It's the only way that anyone in Barovia can have at least an ounce of joy. Babalasaga took one of these from us months ago, but we've kept the other one, and we fought to defend it. If we leave, if we flee to Krezik or Valaki, Valaki, not that I would go back to that place now that the Voktas have taken over, but if we were to flee to Krezik, we'd be abandoning the gemstone. Lasaga would take it again. We're not going to do that.
Why are you telling us this?
I want you to know that this place, this winery, it's not just a place of business. It's one of the ways that Barovia can survive. With everything here, with Strahd, the mists, everything. Well, a good drink is perhaps one of the few small joys that anyone here has. If we give up this land, if Lasaga takes our final gemstone, that's it. It will crush spirits across Barovia, what little spirits there are left. We can't abandon it. I tell you this because I trust you, because if you are going against Babalasaga, perhaps you can save not just our children and find your relic, but you can bring us back our other gem as well.
Right. I turn around and look at what everyone else is doing right now and how they're soaking in this conversation.
The dog's body's been making faces at the kids, like not like mean faces, but like, you know, trying to make silly faces, trying to make him laugh, mm-hmm. like sticking out his tongue and pulling at his eyes and stuff like that, and he's just trying to like make him laugh.
Yeah, these boys, the boys that are there, they First of all, they love it. Like, when you do it, they do genuinely laugh. And kind of behind the adult's back, the adults are engrossed in this conversation with Jesper. The boys make faces back at you. So, like, you'll turn around, come back with a face. They'll turn around and come back with a face. And then one of them, you think he might be the youngest, he kind of pulls a cloak over his head. And then when he reveals it, it's a bird's head. It's like a giant raven's head on his body. Yeah. And then he's like, ah! And then he calls it back, and then he's got a boy's head. And he looks at you like, "That, how good is that face? Like, how amazing was that?" kind of thing.
Double thumbs up from Dog's body. Yeah!
Yeah. They all kind of, like, chuckle. One of the older boys kind of slaps him, and he's like, "Martin, you shouldn't do that. We're supposed to keep that a secret." But he is like one of us. It's not, and they're kind of, like, arguing a little bit. Yeah, they're whispering too, so... you see Irina and Ismark kind of nod their heads. Irina will look at Jesper and the rest of the group.
"Well, I can't just allow these children to be the victim of whatever witch is here. I know that I am not as good a fighter as the rest of you, but well, Ismark and I will come to help, as always."
Yeah. Cool.
"Well, if you want any rest, I suggest now you get it. You know everything. I'm not keeping anything back. If you have any questions, let me know."
"I can help you keep a lookout. I don't need to sleep."
"Are you sure?"
"That's fine, yeah. I mean, okay. I can't sleep, so I can at least be of some help."
"Borovir is a difficult place to relax. Those with a... I'm sure that you have a kind soul. It must be difficult, but... try and get what sleep you can where you can." He doesn't understand what you're saying. He thinks, like, "I can't sleep because Barovia is so scary. Not, I have entered in a dark pact and I no longer require the sustenance of sleep." But yeah, they will, some of the other adults head off, and you can hear them kind of preparing rooms. Erwin, who's the younger guy you've been speaking to, he's like, "We have... our rooms are upstairs. We'll set a few aside for you. We're not going to get much sleep anyway. The boys have got one room, but we'll set the rest aside if any of you do wish to get a rest. There's food, there's wine. Take what you need."
I'm sure we can rotate watch as well to aid you through the night.
That would be appreciated, especially for the others, including my father. He won't admit it, but he's getting on in years, and he's not as strong as he thinks he is. But I'll stay up. Me and my brother, Adrian, we'll stay awake with you, no matter what.
Thank you. And thank you for your hospitality.
It's the least we can do. What is a Borovian if he can't offer some travelers wine and a fire,
And what is a Vistana without traveling?
Indeed. I'm surprised, though. We heard Strahd's proclamation about your people. We always thought that the Vistana were on good terms with Strahd, but that seems to have changed, no?
Strahd has abandoned us. We have angered him, and I think it's due to our destiny. Maybe the
It is strange. He has never behaved like this before. We have gone unnoticed by him for generations. Now he reclaims this land. He tells us to come work in his castle. I do not understand it. Why would he turn his back on the Vistana, those who saved him? The legends go that Vistana saved Strahd.
It is true. We did. But that is not now. He has grown mad. Insanity has taken the immortal Lord.
May the Morning Lord have mercy on us to face such a mad foe. Still, he gestures. Erwin will look over to you, Dog's Body. Dog's Body, hello. Wasn't it?
Hi, that is my name. Yes.
I want you to know something. You are safe here. You do not seem like others that we have known.
Uh, Dog's body gets very flustered and starts blushing. He's like, thanks.
No, you need not thank. You have some degree of control over it, your condition, yes?
I can make it happen. I can make it unhappen. And I have some degree of control when I am in the happening. And I try not to make it happen because I don't like what would happen if I can't control the happening. Yes.
You should know, all of you, my family and I, well, we have our own secrets as well. But Dog's Body, not all shapeshifters, not all creatures that transform are primal or savage. Some of them can be forces of good. Some of them can be noble beings that serve to help others. Perhaps you will find someone who can help you with this. And it's a, I am that person.
It's funny you should say that. I was going to ask, but I didn't want to be impolite because I did not want people to know about your condition.
I assume that your friends know of yours. Yes.
Oh, yeah, they know. They know. Good. One of them doesn't like it, though, and I don't think she's my friend. Not you, Rose. Not you. And I'm kind of pointing awkwardly at Esmeralda while trying not to look at Esmeralda. Like, Dog's Body's not been looking at Esmeralda since Esmeralda was mean to him.
Yeah, well, Esmeralda's, like, leaning up against the wall, kind of one, her wooden leg kind of kicked back against it. And she just looks over and is like, oh, it's not that I dislike you, Dog's Body, or consider you a friend or foe, but... Well, let's just say my last run-in with your kind, and then she taps the foot on the floor, the wooden artificial leg, didn't go so well for me.
It's not
remember what
kind,
I said about
really.
Control?
It's not my kind. I did not choose to be this. You called me it, therefore I did not want to assume that you were considering me a friend in that category.
Yeah, she goes quiet at that. I think that kind of puts her in her place a little bit. She's just like, well, let's just say we all have our prejudices. And then she kind of rubs the wooden leg a little bit and then makes her way off. If and she looks towards Rose. Rose, I can't remember. Did Rose talk about Ben around Esmeralda, or was that before? Because I think you did it after Dog's Body transformed, or was that beforehand?
No, it was before. She's not talked. She's not spoken about.
She's
Ben
not. She's not mentioned it. Okay. No. All right. In that case, she will probably look at Rose and kind of say, "I noticed the way that you fought against those undead creatures. If you ever want some tips on hunting vampires, come and let me know." And then she's just going to take a turn. She nods. Martikovs, I will be taking you up on your offer. If we need to help these people get to the saga, I will help them. But if you need my help, I will give it as my mentor did. And then with that, she just makes her way upstairs.
If anyone wants to know how to get kicked by a horse, let me know.
There is a... Esmeralda stops like mid-conversation, like mid-walk, and you do hear a kind of like... and then she carries on. A very unexpected laugh. And I think like so I think the Martikovs all kind of laugh like at this really awkward joke that they aren't 100% sure if it was a joke or not, but this weird dragon man said something funny to them and they laugh about it.
I mean, it was totally deadpan, just like,
yeah.
No smile afterwards.
Fact, yeah.
Like, yeah. If anyone was looking for some humor on his face, there was none.
But that kind of makes it funnier, I think, to everyone else.
Yeah.
Great try.
I'm serious.
Well, if you guys want to take some form of rest, I leave what kind of form of rest it is up to you.
Can I have a quiet word? Once everyone settles down, can I have a quiet word with Erwin and pick him up on his, I can totally remove this curse and make you, like, not a freak anymore. That would be cool.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, you grab a moment where people are either resting or separated, and he kind of brings over a small glass, like a glass of wine, sets it down next to you, has his own glass of wine, and kind of he lets out a deep breath. He's kind of a heavy set guy. He's quite big and broad, not hairy, but he does have this avian feature to him, like a kind of perched hawk almost.
So I'm afraid that if you're hoping for some sort of cure, I can't offer one. I can't even make you... Your condition cannot be altered. I cannot make you like us. You are what you are, dog's body. Wolf, I assume?
I think so. I was going for more dog. You know, like a husky or a mutt. I don't know.
I'm afraid I don't know much of were-dogs, but were-wolves are quite common here in Barovia. Normally, what we know of our... I don't call them cousins, but the werewolves of Krezik, north of Krezik. I have a friend of mine keeping an eye on them. They're vicious. Werewolves are aggressive, territorial, very loyal to each other, but nasty, selfish. I don't get that impression from you, because I don't think that the transformation was either completed or you have something that is helping you keep your sense of self. It's not unheard of. Myself, I am a were-raven. It is an old familial trait, shall we call it. I don't consider it a curse. It gives us abilities, strength that others do not possess. We try to use it for good. We try to use it to help the people of Barovia. Werewolves, not so much, but there is something different about you. Something that makes you still you. I can't change it. I can't remove it. But you said that you can sometimes control it when you're transformed. I take it not always.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on how many times I get a bump on the noggin, and if something bumps me on the noggin a bit too many times, I get a bit confused and a bit angry about it, a bit pointy.
Yes, that's the wolf taking over at that point. You're like an animal. Your fight or flight kicks in. You want to defend yourself. You start to see everyone around you as an enemy. I might be able to help you with that. Not much, but I might be able to make sure that if you do lose yourself, it's easier to return, perhaps, to who you were. It's a matter of control.
That's really kind of you, particularly because there's a young lady in that group that I don't really want to upset. And these are the first people in a long time who haven't thrown things at me. No, not like that. Like, it's just, these people haven't thrown things at me, and I haven't experienced that in a long time, so I'd kind of like to follow them around for a bit more, but one of them has a particular aversion to werewolves, and I don't really want to antagonize it, so, and get thrown out, because it's nice having friends and having voices outside of your head that are actually attached to people. But are you telling me that there is nothing I can do?
Well, not anything that we know of. I must admit, we've never looked into freeing ourselves from lycanthropy. It's been a great asset to my family for generations. But it's not impossible. If there's anything I know about this world, what little of it I know, having spent so many years in Barovia. Even if the world around you is miserable and dark and seems like oblivion, there's always a little bit of hope. I'm sure that there is a way to undo this condition that you have. I would suggest people like the Abbot He may have his fanatics, but we know that he is powerful. There's no way that somebody that does not have some true power could control Krezik. I wouldn't be surprised if Strahd himself doesn't have some concoction or elixir hidden away in his castle that might remove such an affliction. Perhaps even someone like Baba Lasaga. And then there are always the dark rumors of the mountains to the south. They say that if you truly have a dark desire within your heart, Mount Garakis will, well, see it fulfilled. But I can teach you control. I can show you a few things. It's mental. It requires willpower and sound mind and belief in yourself, but I can show you some control to help, and I can give you something. And he goes over to a drawer and he opens it and he pulls out, you see it glittering, you see a silver necklace. Now I suggest you keep this in a pouch, don't put it on your skin. If you feel yourself getting out of control, if you feel yourself losing a grip, grab this. The pain will help you remember. It will sharpen your senses. Might help bring you back. But I'll show you things. The techniques I teach the boys when we are younger, because we are born with this condition. The boys sometimes struggle. They get defensive, fighty, aggressive. So we teach them ways to quiet their mind. That may help.
Much appreciated. You kids, by the way.
Yes, they're good boys. I only hope that the others will not be ill-treated. I imagine the witch will not harm them. Use them as a bargaining chip, maybe. But who can tell the minds of witches?
We'll get them back.
Thank you. I trust that you will. I have a good feeling. Your friend Jesper is very convincing. Very convincing young man. Still. And what he will do is, over whatever rest period you have, Dog's Body, Erwin will give you techniques, like mental techniques, that you will have advantage on your saving throw to resist frenzy. So when you test for blood frenzy, you will make it with advantage. Having the silver emblem. It's actually, you notice the emblem, the silver emblem he gives you is that of a half risen sun. It's like a half, you know, a sun rising, basically. And he gives that to you, and yeah, that will be part of the advantage on those saving throws.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool. Zeki Zeros, anything while you guys rest? I have a thing for Zeki during your resting period. What kind of rest are you guys all taking, by the way? Do you guys want to try and get in a long rest? Are you going to try and take a short rest? What do you want to do?
Long rest.
I think if we're going to face up Bubba, we need a long rest.
Take a short rest for now, and then if anything happens, I will let you know. Okay. I mean, maybe it won't. We'll find out.
So,
anything... What?
So, you want me to spend hit dice on short rest, but end up getting a long rest anyway.
All right, how about this? If something does happen, I'll let you take a short rest beforehand.
Okay.
How about that? That sounds good to me. Sure.
I'm going to hold off on hit dice.
Jesper, Rose, Zeros, Zeki. Anything you guys would like to do in particular?
So, I mean, I guess Zeki's keeping watch because she don't sleep. But I think my intention was to take at least first sleep and then second watch, I suppose.
Okay.
As part of like the long rest, if that's a thing that I can do as a long rest.
Okay. Just resting and then watching.
Resting and watching.
Okay.
Netflix and chilling.
Don't want to go talk to your buddy Ismark or anything like that?
I imagine he's not in the same room as me, is he?
He's not.
No. It would be awkward if I like knock on his door and like... Tatiana, is Ismark there?
Can Ismark
come out and play?
Sure.
I see his flail.
Rose? Anything?
Not particularly. I think she might take up Esmeralda on her offer about some tips and tricks, but probably not until she's had some rest.
Okay, sure. All right, we'll do that maybe afterwards then. Okay. Zeki. Zeki. Hello.
Hello.
You do not need to sleep. But that does not mean you don't dream. As you are taking watch, the mist that fills the grapevine. Nobody else sees this. Only you. Always only you. You see shapes beginning to form in the mists. Various different shapes. A giant spider. A great slug. A humanoid shape whose limbs are all just that slight too long. And you begin to hear their voices calling out to you. Just as you scan your eyes looking for any danger. Our chosen one, daughter of joy. There is a power in these lands, buried in the earth. The seed they told you of. It contains great power. Power. Power enough to defeat this witch. Power to turn the tide. Power to assault the castle. To claim what is yours. You must get the seed.
Seed. Where would I find it?
In the earth. The earth which is life. The earth which is not of Barovia.
I think Zeki would then just start walking outside.
Okay.
Just like, sure. I'm just going to get some air.
Okay, yeah. The Adrian, who's one of the were-ravens, is like,
Dragon woman, are you? It's dangerous. Don't go too far from the house.
I won't. I just need a minute.
Okay. All right. Do you need a torch or anything? Can you dragon people see in the dark?
I can see. It's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And he just goes back and you can see him sort of like munching on some food. And he's just watching the fields, kind of scanning it, looking for any signs of danger. And has no reason to mistrust you. And you, yeah, begin walking out. You kind of feel that fresh soil beneath your clawed feet as it sinks into the soft dirt. And the shapes are pulling you towards the middle of the grape field. You can see them all converging, like standing in a circle.
Like she's kind of like almost like in a trance state, almost like sure. She kind of has very little control over it. It's just sort of pulling her in.
Yeah. Yeah. You just hear like seed power, turn the tide, save your brother. Like these whispers kind of all merging in your mind. And eventually you find yourself on your knees in the middle of the grape field, just dirt and earth. All kind of sunken into your claws by the time you kind of realize, as a green glow just bathes your white face, your white scales in light, and there in the earth, dug down, is a gemstone about the size of a pine cone that gives off this soft green light, and you can tell, you can feel the power emanating from it. It's like that time when the earth was shaking. And for a moment, you connected with it. The power in this gem, you could do this. It's the same power. You can feel that connection growing.
But
you come to your senses. Just... Like, this is when you're in your... Yeah. You kind of... The trance almost ends. The mist figures aren't there. But you can see this gemstone before you, and you know, Zeki, if you take this gemstone, it is power in your hands. This will be a real powerful boon to carry with you.
this. She's kind of like thinking it over, like, do I do it? Like, what? Like, she's almost just trying to work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, she'll just hesitantly just grasp it out of the ground and hold it.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
When you do. Do you, like, how do you hold it? Does she, like, clutch it to her chest, or do you, like, hold it in your hands up to your face?
It's kind of like a, like, I imagine that she kind of, like, slowly goes in to grab it, and then she kind of just, like, before she can think about it too much, she just snatches it and just pulls it close.
Pulls it up. When you pull it up to your face, you stare into it, and the mist around you, that's kind of been like a ground fog pooling around you, scoops up around your whole body. It's almost like a mist armor that enshrouds you, and tendrils reach out, they grab the green stone, and it pulls it to your forehead, and you feel it kind of digging into your flesh and your scales and your bone. Almost there's pain, but it's almost tolerable. And then eventually you just pull your hands away, and there's just a very faint green glow. And there is just this tiny kind of green dot in the middle of your forehead, like a little green gemstone that's been embedded in the center of your forehead.
Okay. she's just like in shock, just like she can't believe he's just done that. Like, mm-hmm. She's just like, but also like, I guess I could feel kind of good though, right? Like, she's.
It's power. There's definitely power here. You don't know how to use it yet, but it's raw power. It's,
yeah.
Your body feels like where you'd become withered and you felt like your body kind of drained of life and energy. Now you look down and your arms are like they used to be. You're youthful. They're fleshed out. All that dissection and the kind of sallowed skin that you had is gone. It's like you've gone back to being old Zeke. You feel yourself filled with life and energy once again.
I can't go back. They can't see me. I can't do this. They can't see me.
As you are there contemplating all of this, it's when you begin to hear rustling on the far edges of the grapevine. And a call goes out in the wine house as one of the young were-ravens calls out, "Incoming! They're coming again!" And everybody is drawn to attention. Zeke, you're the first one to see it, kind of making their way through from the far edge, the southern road. You see maybe a dozen of these vine plant-like creatures. Kind of moving their way soundlessly, apart from the slithering of and crunching of twigs and branches. Behind them, you can see one shabby humanoid, tattered, matted hair and thick dreadlocks, leather tunic, but all rough and covered with bones and fetishes. And then behind them, maybe 9-10 feet tall, a broad-chested creature made of burlap sacks. You can see large kind of broad shoulders made from metal poles stuffed with a writhing straw and two enormous dragging furrows into the ground behind it. A giant scarecrow, its huge sack-like face, its mouth twisted into different stitched means. As it just drags its raked hands through the ground. And that is where, my dear friends, you may take a short rest, and we will roll initiative.
Man, right. I was going to say, I was going to rush out into the room and, like, next to Erwin,
"Where's Zeke?"
Well, that's what you can do on your turn there, Tom Hazel.
Man, I am turning on Erwin if he fucking let her go out there.
Oh, Erwin might turn on you, considering what Zeke's just taken. We'll find out. I love it. I love it. I love it. Right. Initiative. Zeros, that's a 17 for you.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, Jesper's rolling hit to dice, so that's not initiative. Who else has initiative for me?
Hit diced.
Oh, yeah. Seven.
Seven for Dog's Body?
Seven.
9.
Nine for Zeki. Roll for Irina. Whopping 5 for Irina.
And Mr. Belmont.
Oh, I keep forgetting to add fucking Ismark.
Mr. Belmont, I'll have to manually enter him.
Ismark. Is 11.
Speedy boy.
Sorry, Rose initiative?
9.
It's like it was a build up. I was waiting. It's like 9.
Sorry. I was unmuting.
Jesper.
9.
That's right.
14.
14 on initiative.
Hey!
All to roll on the bad guys. Okay. So, for the purposes of this, all of the were-ravens and Esmeralda, you can see that there are dozens of these plant creatures kind of fanned out in front of the winery, and they're all advancing. For the purposes of combat, Esmeralda and the were-ravens are fighting, but they're going to fight a bunch of these creatures that you guys aren't engaging. You guys are left to engage the main force. And Erwin is even calling out, like, friends, deal with that group. We'll take care of the rest. Kind of calling out to you guys, and Esmeralda's doing the same. Zeki, you see 5 of these plant creatures just kind of drop their arms and begin rushing towards you. And then when they get, like, you can see them rushing towards you, about to swarm you, and there's this moment of panic. When they suddenly just kind of stop, and they look at you, and these twisted plant-like life forms almost seem to react, and you see this green pulse kind of in your, from your vision, you can just feel this green light emanating, and they just walk around you and charge towards the front door instead, leaving you in the middle of the field. The giant scarecrow doesn't seem to be affected by this, nor does the man in the leathers, but the plant creatures do kind of rush around you, leaving you alone as they rush towards the front door. They shoulder past, and they are basically tearing at the door. They're going to spend their first round breaking down windows and breaking down doors, like psh, 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 like zombies in a zombie movie. These vine-like hands and appendages kind of whip round and are beginning to break through the barricades and things like that that lead into the winery. Xeros, you emerge, run downstairs, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I see Zeki's not there, where's Zeki?
Adrian, who is the brother on thing, is like, she was going out for air before these things attacked.
I don't suppose I can see her through the window or anything, like I can't...
You make a perception check for me.
Sure. Because I've got no idea how far away she went either.
She neither does she. She just was like, I'm here now.
Oh, I'm level 20.
Okay, so Xeros, you just happen to look out the window as these creatures are trying to burst their way in. You almost shove one of them to the side, and you just catch a glimpse dead down in the middle of the grapevine, maybe 50, 60 feet away from the front door. You see Zeki on her sort of hands and knees, and you just see this green glow coming from like her head, but she looks healthy. She looks like young Zeki did, like before she made the deal. But then her body is kind of swarmed by these vine creatures that stand between you and her. And there's 5 of them.
But she's out there on her own.
She
is. So, 60 feet away?
Yep.
5 opportunity attacks to get to her?
Maybe you could try, like, if you wanted to try like shoulder barging through the door to try and shove one of them back and stop it getting a swipe at you. Not all 5 will get a tax opportunity against you. I'd say maybe 2 or 3 would.
If I went through the window, could I not go round like the house? And
there's still, well, if you went to the side, because like I said, there is like a dozen of these things and all of the other NPCs are engaging the rest of them, you're still going to get opportunity attacks, but maybe less.
But it is also opening the door for them to just come in. Yeah, but it's also Zeki. Okay.
But how do you want to do it? Like, describe it to me what Xeros does.
I'm just charging through the things, maybe like holding He Who Grins almost like flat side up and just shunting things
trying
away.
Trying to knock them past. Cool. Make a just make a strength check for me. Yeah.
Strength check, sure. This so, one is
athletics,
a
yeah,
natural one. So six.
Oh dear. Oh dear, Tom Hazel. So you run and slam into them, but their bulk, the sheer number of them, holds you back, and you're like pressing up against them. I'm not going to make them give opportunity attacks because you don't manage to get past them. They are just holding you, cannot move through their space. They are holding you back.
Okay. Was that
I'll
just
take that as one of your attacks.
As one of my attacks? Okay.
Right, because it would be like a shove. You're trying to like shove past them, basically.
Okay. If I have multi-attack, would it be rude to ask for a double shove?
No. No, you could do that.
I kind of want to try that again. I want to get to Zeki.
Yeah, and do you like, have extra attack? Because I can't remember if you got that when you leveled up.
Oh.
I don't know, then. Anything else you'd like to do on your turn, Tom Hazel?
I guess it's just a bonus action, right? I'll Shield of Faith myself.
Okay.
No, I can't. I do nothing.
Okay.
I burn my sword. I light my sword up, and that's my turn.
And He Who Grins is set aflame. Jesper! Yeah.
I'm going to follow the heavy footsteps of Xeros.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would kind of stir me awake, and I'd be straight onto the Sun Sword.
Yeah, this call of, like, they're here, they're attacking, is kind of wakes you all up as well.
I'd run through... in his wake, kind of bust open the Sun Sword en route, like a lightsaber, and come swinging at the things that are holding him back.
Yeah, so imagine it like, I'm not going to do a map, this is very much theater of the mind. Imagine that you guys can reach downstairs, I'm not going to make you spend movement to do that. You have like a big open country kitchen, there's like a big dining room table, there's counters, and then a big set of doors. These creatures are like breaking in through the doors and windows of this country kitchen. And yeah, they'll be able to move into the room next turn. They spent their turn smashing down the door and smashing down the windows, and they're going to swarm in next turn. So yeah, you can engage. There's two of them by the main door, which you can engage with.
Okay.
The rest are all at windows and stuff like that.
So I'll be doing my Sun Sword first, which is a 21 to hit.
Easily.
And it's 11 radiant, because I'm doing it one-handed.
So you kind of swipe on, and the radiant energy of the thing burns through these creatures' bodies. These, yeah, twisted creatures made of vines and thorns just cleaves through them. They still stand. They are not immediately destroyed, but they are heavily injured by this one blow.
So, because I leveled up, I can actually just do a second attack with my Sun Sword now. It's an extra attack.
Okay, you've got extra attack.
So I'm going to swing that one instead, again.
Okay.
21, again.
Nice.
That hits.
9 radiant.
9 points of damage. Again, the second strike comes down, cleaving through. Still, the creature still stands, but now parts of its body, kind of like droids in Star Wars, you're like lopping off these vine-like appendages, but they still manage to kind of keep standing and reaching out towards you.
Okay.
Do you have extra attack, right? So you can attack twice as the attack action. If you have a bonus action, you can still offhand attack, because it's offhand attacks are made as a bonus action.
And then I guess I did do those both one-handed damage, so I will jab with the dagger as well then.
Yeah, that's, so I'm assuming you're still dual wielding, even though you've got the Sun Sword.
So 26 to hit, 7 piercing with the dagger.
Yeah, and these guys don't have it. And with that one, with the dagger, as you've kind of lopped off one its right limbs, lopped off its left arm, and then with the dagger you plunge it into its throat and kick it, and the body just slumps backwards, unmoving, as this vine creature falls to the ground.
I'll shout to Xeros. Where are you going?
Zeker. It's not my turn. I can't really reply, can I?
You can reply.
They're all happening at once throughout the
Yeah, okay.
You say
Zeki. Oh, yeah. Zeki. Zeki.
Zeki, innit?
I'll just sound confused.
Okay.
In response, she's outside, and then just carry on being overwhelmed by fighting.
Sure. Yeah. Zeki, you see the man with the tangled, matted brown hair and the leathers kind of comes up, and he's muttering, not really in a language, but just like,
I must first run. The witch must take the wine and kill them. Get more.
He looks down and meets your eyes.
Yes, the gem. Give it to me.
And comes reaching out towards you with like a gnarled branch-like hand. For a 13 to hit.
That's exactamundo.
Exactamundo. Four points of damage. Yes.
4 points. Can I cast Hellish Rebuke as a reaction, please?
You may.
Please do.
Dex saving throw.
That is indeed you do.
That is a 4.
Oh, yep. Fail. So that is 2d10 fire damage against your... Nice. Bam! 15.
Oh my god! So as this man reaches out and he manages to kind of like swipe you across the face, almost with like a big heavy oaken fist, kind of just punches you. And what does it look like? Is it like coming from Zeki, or how do you want this to look?
I suppose it would be kind of like, it's her warlock stuff. So I guess it'd be like a dark sort of ichor black flame that sort of just
like the mist
from like a
the mist that had been coiling around you suddenly surges like black flames onto him, and you just hear as he kind of stumbles back all on fire. As he stumbles into the grapevine, several of them are now sort of like beginning to burn and light up as all the leather and fur he was wearing becomes like a wick and ignites quickly. He does not. He regrets his immediately. He regrets his life. As you strike him, the shadow of this giant scarecrow golem kind of looms over, and you just hear in this kind of rasping voice from a sealed mouth as these two giant raked hands come crashing down onto you, as the Thresher Scarecrow takes its go. So first attack, 19 to hit.
Yep.
12 to hit on the second one.
No, that doesn't hit.
Oh, but the first... Okay, so the first one does.
First one hits.
Okay, it's lucky that the second one didn't as well. 14 points of slashing damage as the first one carves across you. And you can see that both claw attacks were aimed in such a way that if both had struck you, it would have shredded and torn at the armor you were wearing, and would have like ripped parts of it free. But you managed to kind of pull yourself away and stop the armor from taking any damage as the second one misses you. But yeah, the creature just kind of looms over. Is Mark the Lesser?
Here we go,
comes
boys.
Running down. Flail spinning in the air. And he will... he didn't take any of the alchemist fire. He just had the flail. He will run downstairs, see that there is... Jesper and Zeros are trying to get out the main door, but one of these vine creatures has like slithered in through one of the open windows. He will pick up a chair on the way, throw it towards the thing to try and send it off balance.
Sit down.
4, which still hits. And he takes 4 points of damage as this chair is kind of thrown at him en route, and then he will use his other attack with the flail to hit as well. For another 9 points of damage. And then he normally has 3 attacks, so I will make another one. That also hits. For another 9 points of damage. So you can see that Ismark nearly crushes one of these creatures. It is still standing. It's managing to kind of pull itself free, but it looks heavily weakened as Ismark is just smashing it to pieces with this flail. All this kind of like wet, pulpy moisture moss goes everywhere as it's like... And this wet flail slapping around.
What a hero.
He's gotten used to it then.
Oh yeah, he's a warrior. He knows how to use a flail.
Yeah.
So, can I look out the upstairs window?
Yes.
I look out. So, when I'm looking outside, can I see any big clusters of shitheads?
Yeah, if you look straight down, if you look straight down, there's like a cluster of... we've got the one's been killed at the door, one's inside. There's three of them clustered outside the main door. The other things you can see Zeki from your better position. You can see this giant golem creature looming over Zeki, and now a flaming man who's like...
Fantastic. Can I... is the flaming man and this scare... Actually, no, I don't want to hit Zeki. Can I cast Hail of Thorns as a bonus action at second level and shoot down at to all of the ones that are gathered at the door?
Yeah, you can basically, with expert agility, you kind of half lean yourself out of the window, kind of hooking your feet into the windowsill and kind of leaning your body outside. You look straight down and pull the bowstring back as it looks down onto these plant creatures below.
Nice.
Oh no, I rolled like crap. I rolled a 2. That's only going to be 11 to hit.
What does the Hail of Thorns effect do? Is that on hit or does it affect
it's on a hit.
On the narrative?
It's on your next hit. It's a concentration spell.
It just misses
the arrow, like through the a kind of awkward angle means that the arrow thuds into the ground.
But I have multi-attack, so
yes, you do. Are you using the magic arrows, by the way?
Not for this one.
Okay. Just make a note when you use them so you mark them off.
I've rolled a natural 1.
Oh my god.
Wow.
We moved to physical dice, so this wouldn't happen. So yeah, just kind of trying to keep
still,
your balance.
It's still like the next
it still stays.
Hit is on my bow. So
it remains. Well, better luck next time, Rose. Zeki. One day your Strahd rolls won't be bad. Zeki.
Can I? I've got 1 level 3 spell slot left. I'm trying to think of what I can do. my last one. I'm going to cast a guarding bolt on this boy, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's do that on the big scarecrow looking dude.
Okay. Love that
spell. Yeah. That'll be ranged spell attack. D20 plus 6. Bam! That's a 9. That's a big old whiff and a miss.
Actually, it's not. This thing is so big and slow. It's so big and slow, and it's about 10 feet away from you because its arms have these massive, long, kind of raked arms, so it actually has reach. You manage to just get enough distance where you throw the guiding bolt in front of you, and it just collapses into this thing's chest. This thing is not hard to hit as the divine energy strikes into it.
Christ. I did not expect that. So that'll be 4d6 radiant damagio.
Well, if you're casting at third level, it's higher.
Yeah.
4d6. 6?
Yep, because it's 2 extra.
66.
Good lord. Wow. She's so happy.
Bye.
Oh my god.
One.
Oh my
Christ.
God.
4 sixes of 3
what
and
a
4.
Roll.
That is insane damage.
31 what? Points of radiant damage. I think, like, holy Rhiannon shit. Was just like, Katie, look, I'll have that.
How the turns
to be
of
fair,
tables.
I haven't been terrible in Strahd since we switched to
No, they've been
dice.
Normal.
It's
only this one.
People tell me that I'm really unlucky in Strahd, and I'm like, but I do hit.
You've been... I think it's because it used to be so bad, like when we first started on Roll 20. So Zeki, this bolt of energy strikes out of your hands and like makes the creature kind of reel back, but then it just recovers, and it's still fighting.
Christ. Can I try like move away a little bit, like try and get out of its...
You can, you'll get an attack opportunity if you run back to the house.
Oh, is it worth it? Oh, probably not. But then is it? Because I'm going to get hit anyway. Fine. I'll stand firm. I'll be like, okay, bring it.
Okay.
Bring it.
Trust in your allies to come to your rescue. I love it.
Oh,
dog's
can
body.
Can I like
go on.
Pull some hair, though, over like my forehead?
So you kind of like try to quickly,
do like a
quickly
Spider-Man
brush your head forward.
Like,
sure,
do the
you could also, quite honestly, Zeke, you could like rip off a part of your shirt and like tie it around your head or something like that. Yeah, you can hide it if you want. Yeah, for sure.
I'd really like it if she tied like a bandana across her the thing and it still just shone a little green light.
Might be.
Can't block that.
Dog's body.
Can't block that bad boy. I would like to. So I'm in the house. Just to clarify, is there a way I can get to the minions that are attacking the front of the house, like the main
door? Yes. I'm not going to make you like track movement for that. Basically, you can use your 30 feet to come downstairs, and you're in the fight. Like everything's within 5 feet around you at that point.
Cool.
Is Mark's fighting one that's crawling on the ground? There's three more trying to crawl in through the windows.
Mm-hmm. I will activate my Crimson Rite of Storm, so I now have storm powers.
Oh, okay.
In the process, taking 2 points of damage. So Dog's body is going to run downstairs, cut himself with the axe, and you just see lightning start to fizz and crackle up the axe blade. And then he's going to take a swing with his great axe at the nearest bad boy. I rolled 13 plus 6 is a 19.
Easily hits these things.
I rolled a 2 on my d12, but because of great fighting weapon stuff, I can re-roll it because it's a 1 or a 2.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know.
Weapon master.
I rolled.
No, it's a great. It's the weapon style.
Yeah. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points of slashing of axe damage, mm-hmm. and 4 points of storm damage.
Okay.
Axing damage.
The axe cleaves into one of these creatures and lightning courses through its body. It shudders for a moment, still fighting, still standing.
Good. I get another swing. I rolled a 14 plus 6 is...
Hits.
20.
Yep.
Oh, I rolled a 12! Nice. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 points of axe damage, 3 points of storm damage.
Is that the second cleave? You just chop this vine creature in half, splitting it down the middle as it just falls into two components and stops moving eternally.
Nice. Excellent. Are there any of the raven kiddies in this room?
No, the raven kids are being kept back. You can see that they're kind of pushed back into a corner, and the other adults are protecting them whilst the others are engaging them and Esmeralda are engaging on the other side.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah,
Irina.
Sure, I'm between them and bad boys.
Yes. Irina will, having only had a short rest, she doesn't have all of her spell slots back, but she will use her remaining bardic inspiration on Xeros, knowing that he is desperate to get outside for Zeke, and she begins to sing this kind of haunting lament that fills the air, and you just feel it kind of steal your will to go and rescue your sister Xeros, so you have a bardic inspiration, and then she will try and finish off with her rapier the one fighting Ismark, or the one that Ismark is fighting, and with a hit, and then d6 plus 3... or 10 points of damage is enough to finish it off. As it's crawling along the ground, Irina steps up and stabs it through the chest with her rapier.
Ismog throws a chair at it and beats it with a flail, and she just comes in and kill steals.
Yeah, but that's fine because brother and sister, he's just like, great job, Irina, well done. He's very supportive of the kill.
Supportive relationships with their family members? No.
Yeah.
No. Not in Curse of Strahd.
No.
Jesper and Xeros, one of these creatures remains. Jesper, one of them, as you are the bigger threat at this point, having killed one of them tries to wrap these vines all around you. It tries to kind of like assault you with all these different tentacled vines. The other one manages to crawl in through the window and is going to go for Dog's body and do the same thing.
All
right. Jesper, that is a 7 to hit.
No.
Dog's body, that is a 20 to hit.
No.
Oh.
You take 12 points of bludgeoning damage, dog's body, and what you are grappled
nunny?
As these vines all wrap around you, and you are restrained as this thing is kind of almost wrapping itself around you, caressing you like a lover, its kind of arms coiling around your chest and squeezing as tight as it can.
Weird kind of lover, mate. Weird kind of lover. I don't want to comment on your relationship with Nina, but sure, that's where we are.
Yeah. But that's it. These two are the only things left to the vine creatures left to fight. Xeros.
So
there's just one fighting Jesper next to you.
Can I push past it?
You can. It will get an attack of opportunity.
Who cares? I want to get all up in the business of this scarecrow.
I mean, you could disengage. You could disengage if you wanted to. That's your action.
But she's 60 feet away, right?
She is. So you'll need to dash.
So I need to action dash, which I will do.
Okay. 8 to hit you on the attack opportunity. No. Just shove this thing out of the way as you charge forward.
In that case, I'll run up to... If there's a way I can, block Zeki and the skeleton, I want to... Basically, I'm trying to pull Torn.
You can try and impose yourself between it, but this creature seems to be very furious at Zeki. You can see a big blast mark all over its chest from radiant energy. There's also a man on fire next to you both who seems pretty pissed too.
In that case, I am going to action surge... Because I want this thing to hit me. I want to action surge and hit it with my He Who Grins, which is on fire. Scarecrow, nice. It's on fire.
It is.
Here we go.
You get advantage on that one as well.
I do.
So roll twice. Just in case you get the crit. 10?
No. 25 to hit.
Okay. Nice. So on this, as a point, the fire damage is doubled as the blade hits this creature made of straw and it goes up in flames as He Who Grins plunges into it.
Nice.
So what's that? 13 regular damage?
13 slashing damage and then 14 fire damage.
It is still standing as fire begins to spread all over its body, burning it away. And you can now see that underneath the kind of sacks and hay that make up its body is this metal frame, like rusted pieces of tools have been fused together to give it the vague semblance of a rib cage and shoulders and arm joints and things like that. And the straw is now just beginning to burn it away, leaving behind
it's an
metal
automaton.
It is. Is that the end of your turn, Xeros?
Yes, I was meaning to do a thingy special action with my attack, but I missed it, so yeah, carry on.
Okay. Jesper?
I will finish off.
A thing is in your face.
Yes, this. Try and stab it with my sun sword. So that's 25 to hit, 11 radiant again.
Gotcha. Yep. First strike cleaves through parts of its vines once again, just burning them away.
13. Is the second one hit?
Just barely hits, yes.
7 Christ. Radiant for that one.
Yep. Strikes again with the second strike. And then offhand.
And offhand dagger, 12. Doesn't hit, right?
It just hits, in fact. 12 is there, AC.
Wow.
And the third strike, again, you plunge it into its head and rip it free. The creature just collapses to the ground as you kill this thing again with a flurry of three strikes. Plunge.
Slumps. Do I see past the door at the...
You see Xeros like running, flaming sword, plants it into the giant scarecrow and is now fighting engaged with it.
I'm going to use my move.
I think it's hard to miss.
Start moving forward to it.
Yep. So you move 30 feet forwards. Yes. Perfect. The man on fire will take, let's say, 4 points of fire damage. But he kind of turns and you can see this creature, this man, is ravenously mad. The fire, whilst he is screaming in pain, he turns and just raises his hands up towards Zeki and Xeros, just like, for the dark lord! And raises his hands, and a projection of thunder erupts from his hands. I need you both to make constitution saving throws, please. DC 12.
Oh, I forgot to use my bardic inspiration. Can I use it on this?
You can use it on the saving throw, yes.
There goes the bad luck. There it is. I had one good turn.
Back to normal.
Back to Zeki.
It's too good. It's too good to be true.
Come on,
21.
Okay, from me. So you are Xeros, I believe you're taking half damage. Zeki, you will be taking full damage. Zeki is also pushed about 10 feet away from this thing, thrown backwards into the dirt. Okay. And this is at second level, so it's an extra d8, so 3d8. 6, 13.
It's in the chat. Get ready.
Ooh, that's not good. 21 thunder damage. So 10
Mark
thunder
Humes.
Damage to Xeros. Yes?
That is exactly lethal, my friend.
Oh, hey. And Zeki goes down.
Is there an episode where these dragons don't go down?
I don't think so.
No, probably not. No. Zeki is knocked backwards as this wave of thunder erupts and you are thrown through the ground into the mud.
How many times has Zeki fallen down in this campaign? I'm really curious.
Every fight.
But sometimes there's multiple times within those fights, so I really want to add up.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I haven't got to face my problems now. I've got problems coming up. I ain't got to deal with them now.
You just cause problems.
You are a problem.
Stay there!
You have another problem right now, Rhiannon, because the giant skeleton moves forward. It's going to stay within combat range of you, Xeros, but it positions itself between you and Zeki, so it kind of moves Christ. Around you. And then, with it being on fire, it just brings these giant rake arms to the side and begins spinning around, just thrashing everything around it, just like a whirlwind of blades.
Shit.
Zeki, you need to make a dexterity saving throw. You automatically fail, and you're going to take a death save because you take damage. Yep. You take one death save failure automatically. Xeros, make a dex save, please.
Okay.
I love scares.
Such a dexterous dragon.
The first one was 17.
Oh, the first one, yeah, because you rolled twice, I see. 17 is enough, so you take half damage. I wish that these dice were a bit easier to read. 6, 9, 12, 14, 16, 18... so 22 slashing damage, half to 11 slashing damage. And yeah, that's it because you passed the save. Zeki, awesome. Your armor is also shredded by this. Your armor, it takes a penalty. You take an AC penalty of 1 as the armor is partially shredded by this spinning blade as your body is just churned up on the ground.
Bloody hell.
So would you take an AC penalty? Because I think the armor didn't actually give you any AC, right?
No.
So
AC 12.
Yeah, because you have... So it's this thing of the armor itself is taking the penalty. So whilst you're wearing that armor, your AC does go down. But if you take it off and cast mage armor with your shadow armor, or armor of shadows, or whatever it's called, it would go back to its normal value. But you can't... Okay. You would need to activate that ability, basically.
Sorry.
Ismark, on his turn, there are two of these creatures left. He'll go for the one fighting Dog's Body, smashes it with a flail. That's going to be a hit, followed by a miss.
Watch the face.
That is 7 points of damage to that one. He does manage to avoid your face, Dog's Body, and then he will try and wrestle thing off of you, but he fails. He's like, trying to pull it off, like, I will help your Dog's Body. Oh, this thing's actually quite tough. He's like struggling to pull it free off of you. Rose Vanandi, the targets that you previously had have all been brutally murdered by your companions, but you do see this giant thresher creature fighting Xeros.
Yeah, I can't hit it because with Hail of Thorns, because then it would damage Zeki and Xeros, so...
May I present to you an option? If you target the druid next to Xeros and the threshing scarecrow, you will only hit Xeros and the two enemies, because Zeki was pushed 10 feet away from them.
Xeros is fine. Look at him.
He's a tough boy.
Because he's actually not that tough because he hasn't had a long rest.
Well, how much do you know?
I had a big short rest.
Okay. In the interest of saving Zeki, who I can see is on the floor.
Exactly.
I will take
a shot.
Take the shot. Take the shot.
It might not hit.
It might not.
Who knows? I'm having bad luck. I rolled an 18. 18 plus 9.
That hits the druid who is on fire, yes. Okay. So this arrow thuds into his chest and then what explodes into thorns around him, like...
So it hits the scarecrow, too.
It does, yeah. It hits the scarecrow, Zeros, and the druid,
so,
yes.
So, I'm sorry, Zeros.
That's cool. What's it going to be, like, 3 damage?
So the... Wait a minute.
Walk us through,
Katie. First one is the normal damage to the druid, which is 11 on the arrow. And then they have
the arrow
to make dex-
embeds in his chest. I mean, he dies immediately, the druid.
Okay, good.
The arrow pierces his chest and he dies, and then it explodes in thorns.
Yeah, so they have to make a dexterity saving throw.
Okay. The Thresher Scarecrow, who has a dex of minus 1, rolled a natural 20 for 19.
I got minus 1.
Oh my Christ!
Yes! Yes!
Minus 1.
So half of this, then.
The worst roll in high
roll. So the Scarecrow will take half, Zeros is taking full.
So it's the full damage is 10.
Full damage is 10. Okay, so the Scarecrow takes 5, and Zeros takes 10. As thorns erupt out from it.
That is easily the lowest roll of my rollers ever. Minus 1.
Minus 1.
Holy shit.
Do I still get my second shot?
You do get your second shot,
I don't know how Hail of Thorns works. I've never used it before. So that
it's
means
expended
it's
on the
concentration
it's expended,
up to,
yes.
Okay, that's fine. So normal shoot, I will shoot the Scarecrow then for a natural 20.
It has returned. I ask
make
now.
From that one.
Is this a regular arrow?
Let's put a magic one in there.
Sure.
Let's put a magic one in there.
So max damage, and then roll damage again, and then add modifiers.
That will be 12. For the max, and then another 6, so 18.
Yep.
Total.
That's the total. That's with modifiers and stuff as well.
Yep. I put modifiers on the first bit.
The arrow thuds in, and you see this thing stagger from this arrow that embeds itself in its shoulder, ripping away parts of the sacks and hay and
it will
debris
be one more
that's
that.
Made its body.
One more damage than that
because of the magic arrow.
Magic arrow.
Sure. Ugh, as it stumbles back. Anything else, Rose, on your turn? You are still in the top floor looking out the window, yes?
No, I think I'm just going to keep assaulting from this until this one's dead.
Makes sense. Zeke, that's a death saving throw, please, my dude.
Should we get a nat one on this boy? Just watch. Oh, it was close!
It was very close. Holy shit.
It's very close. God. It's another fail.
That's 2.
Dog's body.
I am grappled.
You are restrained.
Can I make a check against like wriggling out of this bad boy, or can I just attack it? But it's disadvantage, isn't it?
So yeah, you're restrained, which means this is something that I've been getting wrong in high rollers. Grappled as a condition, you don't have disadvantage on attacks. Attacks don't have advantage against you. Restrained, you have disadvantage and attacks have advantage against you. In this case, you are restrained whilst you are grappled. So this thing is binding your limbs with its vines. It's actually got itself wrapped around you. You can attempt to escape. You can use an action to make a strength check to free yourself of the creature's grip.
Or I can attack at disadvantage.
Or you can attack at disadvantage, yes.
Nobody has really chomped at this guy yet, have they?
Ismark whacked him once.
Okay. I will risk attacking it at disadvantage. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Sure.
10 is my lowest, plus 6 on the great axe.
Still hits.
So
you whack yourself with the axe. Cutting at the various vines and things like that.
I rolled a 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 on great axe damage and a 6 on storm damage.
So that is just enough, literally bang on. The lightning arcs through this creature's body. You feel the vines relax and fall about as you are freed.
Sweet. Is there anyone else that I can attack with my extra attack?
If you wanted to, you could go and start helping the others, because like Esmeralda and the other were-ravens are fighting, but like in other parts of the houses. You could rush and start helping those guys, or you can start to make your way out towards the giant Thresher Scarecrow that is fighting Xeros.
I'm going to go for the giant... I'm going to choose the giant Thresher Scarecrow mark, please.
Okay, you won't be able to reach it. You won't be able to reach it and attack it in this turn.
That's fine. I have 40 foot of feet movement.
Oh, if you've got 40 feet, then you would be able to.
I have 40 foot of feet, please.
Sorry, it was 10, I love that. It was 60
feet
away.
That's a huge shoe.
I'm just trying to plan this out. It was 60 feet away. Thing you got there. They were pushed 10 feet. It's 50 feet away. You won't be able to reach it. Sorry, I had to do some head maths. You could throw the axe. You could get to 10 feet and then yeet the axe.
I'm very tempted to do that.
Do it. Do it.
I'm doing it. I'm yeeting the axe. Yeah. I'm going to yeet the axe, Mark.
Sure.
So run up. Was it just still a standard, like, D20?
It's disadvantage because it's not meant to be thrown, but yeah. Okay. This thing does not look hard to hit.
Okay. I rolled a 4 plus 6 is 10.
Is still enough to hit it.
Hey.
You can hit it with a 9, dude.
Yeah. I rolled an 11! Oh my god, I'm not even, like, I rolled an 11, 12, 13, 14, nice. 15 points of thrown axe damage and a 4 of storm damage.
Of storm damage. So this thing, the axe embeds into it, and you can see that whatever remnants of kind of material have now just completely broken away. And what's left is a terrifying metal skeleton of this giant oversized scarecrow with these huge metal arms. The lightning is arcing up and down its body, and erratically it's moving. It's still alive, but it looks nearly ready to fall. And the axe just lands behind it on the ground as it kind of scatters away.
I'd like to think that as Xeros was fighting it, he just sees this giant axe just boom out of nowhere.
Strike behind it. Irina, on her turn, will run 30 feet out and then will use her last spell slot to cast a first level healing word on Zeki.
Oh, no.
7 hit points.
Oh, she's going to regret doing that, though, when she realizes what I've done.
Yeah, absolutely, but they don't know.
Oh, dear.
And then Xeros. We go to the top of the next round, and Xeros is the next one to go.
Cool. I mean, yeah, I still had some lay on hands, but that means I can attack again. So I will do just that. I will whack it with my burny sword and hit it. For 21, it's oh my god, that's a ton of damage.
You cleave the metal. 18. The superheated blade of He Who Grins cleaves through this metal skeleton, ripping it in half, and the two parts of the metal body just fall to the sides, and a stillness comes over the battle. There is still a battle raging on behind you. You can still hear that the were-ravens are still fighting. Esmeralda calling out. But Xeros, now that you finish, you turn back to see Zeki, whose eyes are fluttering awake. She kind of sits up from where the healing has happened. Jesper, who has begun running out, you can see them about 20 feet ahead of you, just in the dim light. Xeros, you are the only one who sees Zeki. As her hair has been pushed back from the fall, you see this glowing green gemstone embedded in her head as her body is filled with this lifeful magic. And that's where we're going to end today's episode.
Damn.
Oh.
It's like I got to cover up another secret.
Oh. Dog's body see it if he's just like 10 foot away? Like if
Dog's body, yeah, you would, yeah. So you would be, so you're 10 feet behind them. You're next to Zeki. So yes, Dog's body would also see the gemstone. Yeah. Yeah. So
I think Rose would probably join, like, go to the wherever the other battle was. She'd direct her arrows and just keep firing there.
Sure.
Like, she's kind of on this upper level, so she'd probably take that. So she'd
they've got it. They're safe.
Like,
no, yeah.
She's seen Zeke sit up, so she's like, we're good. Oh, I'm going to turn my attention over here. No idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to think that as the scarecrow was toppling, I kind of like grab the axe, and as it like naturally falls out of the skeleton when it's falling, so that I can just give it back to Dog's body.
You can throw it back to Dog's body, like, here. Like, bros, nice. Warrior bros.
Cheers, mate.
Starting to owe Dog's body a lot at this point.
Cheers, geese.
Yeah. You're my new bone bro. I don't call you
nice.
That, though.
Yay! Bone bro!
Well,
anyone that's his friend dies. Don't.
Yeah.
I've always wanted
I don't think
to
anybody
be your bone
should be
bro, Tom Hazel.
The curse of the bone bro.
Oh, no.
Terrible. That's it. That's this week's episode. Character. Thank you so much, everybody.
Randy Tandy.
We're done. We're going to go now. Goodbye.